More mounds were built by ancient Native American societies in Wisconsin than in any other region of North America. At least that's what Bob Birmingham has indicated. Bob's a former state archaeologist, excuse me. And between 15 and 20,000 mounds, and I believe about 4,000 of them roughly are still with us today. One of those mounds, one is an effigy mound in the shape of a human being, survived nearly intact in Wisconsin. Bob thinks it's the only one in the world like it. And it's located near the base of a high hill in Man Mound County Park. It's just outside Baraboo in Sauk County, probably built maybe 1,000 years ago. And it's a huge mound, and we want to talk about it because there's a Man Mound commemoration event coming up that you may want to participate in. A couple of guests with us today to talk about it. John Broihan is the state archaeologist at the Wisconsin Historical Society with me in the studio. John, nice to have you here. Thanks for coming by.
Good morning, Larry.
And Tom Plager with us by phone. Tom's dean and campus executive and associate professor of anthropology and archaeology at the University of Wisconsin, Baraboo, Sauk County campus. So, Tom Plager?
Yes, I'm here.
Thanks.
And, thank you.
Thanks.
Appreciate the opportunity to speak with you today.
Yeah, it's really really a wonderful opportunity here, and it sounds like a wonderful commemoration event for the Man Mound. And we'll talk about that, but let's just talk in general a little bit first here. Why the mounds? Why were mounds built to begin with? John, maybe I'll turn to you first.
Well, we think they were built for many reasons. They certainly were built to cover burials and to hold human burials. We also think that they were built as part of a community renewal ceremony or community ceremony that help unite the community, remind people of their affiliations with each other. They were certainly probably built to maintain balance in the world and maintain balance from between the spiritual world and the everyday life. And then they probably also had, because of this emphasis on the community and reinforcing community ties, we think they probably played a very important economic role in the sense that they reminded everyone that they belonged to a certain community and that if times became difficult for some members of the community, it reminded everyone that since these people were part of that community, they needed to help them out. So we had a variety of functions.
And Tom Plager, as you just in general, again looking at the mounds, there was often a kind of a symmetry to how they were constructed. The bird mounds were often at the top of the hill, and the animals sort of wandering around along the sides of the hill and so forth.
Yes, I think a number of researchers have identified that there are patterns to these mounds, particularly effigy mounds, and the types of animals and the way they are laid out on the landscape that reflect Native American belief systems and possibly also clan organization in Native societies. It's also important to realize that we have about 2,000 years of mound building in the state, and the function and the reason these mounds were constructed changed over time, probably by different peoples as they were constructed for different reasons and different shapes and different areas of the state.
Yeah, and so there wasn't just one group of Native Americans who built these mounds, many different groups of
That's our impression and our understanding of the situation, yes.
Well, what about this Man Mound effigy? Tom, can you describe it for us?
Well, it is an amazing mound. It's approximately 214 feet long prior to its feet being removed by highway construction, and the width at the shoulders is about 48 feet. I'm estimating it's maybe 10, 12 feet high in the center, and it's a human form that shows some movement, almost a walking stance. And then what makes it particularly intriguing is it has a bilobed headdress or two-pronged projection coming out of the head that looks like some type of a headdress. And it is a very unique structure, and what's particularly unique is that it's isolated. It's not surrounded or part of another mound group, which is more common for effigy mound construction to see mounds built together.
And I suppose, well, we didn't have anybody to interview to ask them why it was done that way, but Do you guys want to speculate on why a massive mound like this was built and all by itself? John, I'll turn to you first.
Well, you know, we're not really sure. The other man mounds in Wisconsin weren't necessarily always built in isolation. The man mounds we have records for in Richland County were built among other mounds in a large concentration along the Wisconsin River. So I think it's not entirely clear. An interesting thing about the man mound is that it has a certain animation about it.
Yeah.
And when you go out there and look at it, it has a certain feel to it that you don't sometimes see or sense when you go to some of the other mound groups.
Yeah. Tom, comment from you?
Well, I would agree with what John says, and I think one thing that we'd like to see is some additional research in the area to better understand the context of man mound. We really don't know. We have not had an intensive survey of the surrounding area, so I think it's important to think about this mound as being part of a larger mound landscape in the area. There are mounds in the Devil's Lake area, downtown Baraboo, and I think that these structures are related, but we really don't know what all took place out at the man mound location, and there really hasn't been any professional work done out there in recent years.
I think Tom's right. Sometimes we tend to look at the individual mounds or mound groups as sort of entities in and among themselves, and I think we really need to start backing away from that and looking at them in a much broader perspective. And I think if we can do that with man mound, we might get some better ideas about why it is located where it is.
Yeah, and I expect something. We could envision something a mile or two or even more away that would really connect it with that particular mound.
Right. Yeah, I think so.
By the way, let me give you the opportunity to join in if you have a question for our guests today, John Broyhan and Tom Plager. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. If you're in the Madison area, reach us at 263-1890, 263-1890. Give us a call with your questions or comments. And you can email us as well at talk@wpr.org, and we'd love to hear from you. Well, this man mound is, you think, as I recall from reading, it depicts a North American shaman. Is that right, Tom?
Well, I think that's one interpretation. You mentioned Bob Birmingham earlier in the program, and he's looked at this mound and believes that the headdress, this bi-lobed forked headdress, may represent something indicative of a shaman. It is unique. The man mound that once existed in Laval, I believe, had a similar bi-lobed forked kind of headdress. And this may very well be who is portrayed in the mound as some type of a special individual that may have been a shaman or a healer or someone connected with the supernatural world. I think the fact that he's wearing this costume that's quite unusual gives some credibility to that interpretation.
Yeah. John in La Crescent is on with a question. So let's go to John. John, hi. Thanks for calling.
Yes,
You're breaking up, John. I'm sorry, but I think here's what I think John was trying to get across. He's wondering about this road construction, cutting the feet off, and wanting you guys to expand a bit on how that happened or how that could have happened. And I don't know, Tom, do you want to take that?
Well, I think you have to think a little bit about the way we viewed mounds. Obviously, 100 years ago, this landscape was special enough that the Wisconsin Archaeological Society, the Sauk County Historical Society, and the General Federation of Women's Club thought it was important to preserve it. But our views in terms of how important these structures have changed over time, and in some cases, economic interests in the past have outweighed the interests of preservation. And in this case, unfortunately, the feet were destroyed as part of a road construction associated with the road. I think the fact that we're 100 years later looking at this park and talking about planning for the future reemphasizes the interest of that the public has in preserving the past of Wisconsin. So I think the degree of importance of the way mounds have been viewed in our society has changed over time. the fact that something like this happened, a decision was made in the past that thought the road was more important than the mound. And today I think we would make a different decision, of course, if we were proceeding with construction in the area.
Yeah, I would absolutely agree with that. And as you look back, too, John, at one point, way back, it was sort of a Sunday activity to go out and dig up a mound.
Well, unfortunately, that's true, and that's the way at that point in time people perceived them. I think also early on, like many other resources, either cultural or natural, I think people thought of these as being so plentiful, and there were so many of them around that, one here or there won't make much difference to the total. And, in those days, the road construction and building nice straight roads was what people thought should be done, and thought that that's the way the landscape should look. So I think we're very fortunate that the Sauk County Historical Society and the Wisconsin Archaeological Society became aware that the mound was potentially in danger from additional developments and put together a program to purchase it.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, in fact, it's an anniversary in part, isn't it?
For the
park, 100 years, isn't it?
Yep. Yeah, 100 years ago, the Wisconsin Archaeological Society and the Sauk County Historical Society and the Wisconsin Federation of Women's Clubs had enough money to purchase the land around Man Mound from the owner, and they did. And in 1908, they had a two-day set of festivities. Started out in Baraboo with some lectures and discussions about how this whole project had come about, and went out to the mound and had a dedication, and then the next day followed it up with another series of lectures. So
yeah. And Tom Plegger, I think it was, wasn't it Charles Brown from the Wisconsin Archaeological Society who was so instrumental in all this?
He was. At the time, I believe he was secretary for the Wisconsin Archaeological Society, but Charles Brown or Charlie Brown is someone who really had a vision for preservation in the state. He went on to become what is really our first state archaeologist in the Madison area and the surrounding area. Really, many of the mounds that have been preserved, a lot of the credit has to go to Charlie Brown, who saw it that it was important that many of these structures were disappearing, of these features, and it was important to do something to preserve them for future generations.
Yeah. Talking about the Man Mound commemoration event that's coming, I'm talking about effigy mounds, but zeroing in a bit on the Man Mound today with John Breithahn, who is the state archaeologist at the Wisconsin Historical Society, and Tom Plegger, professor of anthropology and archaeology at the UW-Baraboo Sauk County. Really pleased to have them with us today. And again, you can join us at 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890. I'm Larry Mueller. Jim Packard, our producer here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio, talking about the Man Mound commemoration event and about the Indian Mounds of Wisconsin with our two guests, John Breithahn and Tom Plegger. I do want to mention we had a Ho-Chunk representative scheduled and had a conflict and wasn't able to participate in the program. We'll be on hand. Ho-Chunk will certainly be on hand Saturday. And Tom are a very important part of this whole thing.
I think the mounds in Wisconsin are perhaps the most visible legacy to the Native American past in our region, and it's important that we involve Native peoples. It is their past, and hear their perspectives on how mounds are connected to their culture today.
And as I mentioned Saturday, maybe we should talk a little bit before we go back to the phones. I want to make sure we let people know what's happening on Saturday. And
well,
John, you want to start?
Sure. The official event starts at 10 a.m. and it will last a couple hours. We'll have some speakers, reenactors. The Ho-Chunk will be there with a drum group, and there will be some displays and exhibits there. And then once the official ceremonies are over, there'll be several people there, and we'll be offering tours around the mound, and we can talk about the mound and how it was built and that sort of thing.
And I want to point out there'll be a number of tables with book displays and different organizations that are focused on preservation of archaeology, archaeological resources, and mounds in Wisconsin. If someone's interested, they can contact the Sauk County Historical Society to get more information at 608-356-1001.
356, what is that again?
1001.
356-1001 and 608 area code. Okay, I'm glad to get that information out. And by the way, at the park itself, there's an observation plate. You can kind of climb up and take a look. So it's such a huge area. There isn't anymore?
No, unfortunately, that got to be, I think, a safety hazard. So they took it down. But if you remember going there just a few years ago, there was a small platform.
You will today, if you come out this weekend, be able to see the mound is mowed at differential height. So the structure, the feature itself, has slightly higher grass, which really makes it pop in terms of being able to see the full image. And I should also point out that there is a plan to reinstall at least with paint the feet across the road. So if you come out, you'll get to see for the first time the feet reconnected, at least in line form, to the mound.
Oh, cool. So and that's this Saturday starting at 10?
Correct.
Starting at 10 a.m., like I say, the official program lasts between 10 and 12, and then there will be people around afterwards to talk about effigy mounds in Wisconsin.
And exactly how do we get there? What's the address? Tom Plager, maybe we'll give that to you.
The best thing would be to come in on 33. If you're coming from Madison, you could take 12 and then 33 toward Portage, and you'll see signs off of 33 for Man Mound. Or if you're coming on the interstate to turn on 33 toward Baraboo, and you'll see a mound directing you out to a county road, and then there are signs directing you to the park.
Okay, so it should be pretty easy to find on Saturday. Jim in Harvard, Illinois, we'll go to you next. Hi, Jim.
Yes, good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
A very interesting program. It's very intriguing. I did have a question for the guests, wondering if anybody had ever taken aerial photographs of these mounds, if they outlined them so that they could possibly research that versus other mounds, if there was some significance to their whereabouts.
I can start off here.
Yeah, go ahead, Tom.
There has been a fair amount of aerial photography done involving mounds. Some researchers have used an athletic chalking machine to chalk them at the base so that they can be seen from the air, so that you get a clear representation of the borders of the mounds. But certain times of the year, particularly when the foliage is down, or sometimes even in the early winter with a light snowfall, aerial photography make the mounds considerably more visible. They also have to have the right weather conditions. And then there are differential soil signatures that sometimes show up depending upon what type of vegetation is present on the mound that can be observed from aerial photography. So that has assisted archaeologists, that technology, in locating mounds and also studying them.
Yeah, go ahead, John, to add to that.
And there's also some new technology out there that is giving us basically three-dimensional images of the mounds. So as that technology spreads and more of Wisconsin is photographed using that technology, we'll be able to look at some of these mound groups in more detail again. One of the wonderful things about effigy mounds in Wisconsin, and I think this is also true of the great mound groups in Ohio, is that many people did recognize them as being important early on and took the time and energy to make detailed maps of them. So that's one of the really great things in Wisconsin is we have lots of very, very good maps of mound groups. Unfortunately, many of those groups are no longer with us, and so the maps have really become a key to looking at and doing the spatial analysis. And it's also becoming increasingly easy with GIS to take those original sketch maps, incorporate them into GIS, and place the mound groups back on the landscape. So lots of exciting things going on with new technology and an ability to reinterpret the information.
Absolutely. Well, Jim, thanks for calling. I want to give Bob in Waterville, Iowa, a chance to join us. Bob, hello to you.
Well, good morning, gentlemen. Thank you very much for a great program. I had a question with regards to the man mound, in particular with its age. You're referring to it as an effigy mound. Is it from the effigy mound period? Just by the description, I haven't seen it. It almost sounds like something maybe a little later, like an Oneota-type mound. Has there been any dating of that mound?
Tom Plegger, go ahead.
There hasn't been any dating directly of this mound, but there are several other human and then some bird man-like mounds that look as though it's a human being wearing a bird costume with a similar type structure that have been found in other mound groups. And in Wisconsin, there's some debate as to the beginning of effigy mound culture, but most archaeologists, I think, would agree with it with a time span of approximately AD 700 to about AD 1200. And although we don't know exactly where this mound fits in that window of time, it's somewhere in that interval of AD 700 to 1200.
Yeah, and John shaking his head yes in agreement on that. Thanks, Bob, for calling. Steele in Madison, it's your turn. Hi to you.
Hello, yeah, thanks for taking my call. I had a question. These seems to be projects of some degree of engineering sophistication, and I was just curious to know, what do we know about how the mounds were originally constructed, and then what kind of maintenance went into preserving them and their shape?
Interesting question. We know quite a bit about the actual physical construction of the mounds based on earlier excavations, both avocational and professional. We don't know a lot about how the mounds were actually laid out, what surveying was done, or how the shape was decided on. In mound construction tends to vary a little bit from region to region. Some people in some regions did things a little differently, used special soils, and other regions that wasn't the case. So we know quite a bit about the physical construction, just don't know as much about the way they were laid out. Interestingly, it does not appear that there was a significant degree of erosion or settling of the mounds once they were built. Once they were built, they seemed to be fairly stable. Whether this meant that people came back on a yearly basis or in some sort of cyclical basis to do maintenance, we're not sure. But there doesn't seem to be a lot of erosion associated with most of the mounds until at least you start having people do major land clearing, cultivation, having using the areas as pasture and that sort of thing.
Yeah. John, anything to add to that?
Tom? Yes,
oh, Tom,
I would
sorry.
Say that we do know that they were made with basket loads of earth and involved a significant amount of labor when you consider that there weren't metal tools involved in the construction of these mounds or wheeled carts or draft animals, that you're basically talking human labor. And so it involves a significant amount of group organization and focused energy on the construction of these mounds, particularly the ones that occur in large groups. And when you begin to estimate the amount of cubic footage or cubic yardage in these mounds, you begin to appreciate how much labor took place to organize and see a mound construction over a period of years, probably when we're talking groups, to completion.
Well, you've got something that's just in the man mound. It's 218 feet long.
I believe the original length is 214 feet, and the width at the shoulders was approximately 48 feet. So, it's a sizable construction when you consider hand tools being used to excavate earth and possibly, as I mentioned, basket load for the transportation mechanism. That it really represents a substantial construction feat.
Yeah, absolutely. Steele, thank you for calling. Deborah in Milwaukee, we'll give you a chance next. Hi, Deb.
Hi. Have you been to Indian Mound Park in Sheboygan?
Yes, I have.
I think that's such a lovely park. And I have a couple questions. I'm thinking if this were buried gold or a silver reserve under the ground, they would probably halt road construction immediately and start digging. But I wish that there was more of a priority, because I just think this is like this is the same status as a cemetery, and they don't tear cemeteries down to build roads, do they?
Yeah, that's a good point. Well, talk about what's the status now of any of this disturbing of effigy mounds and that sort of thing, John.
Well, effigy mounds are considered to be cemeteries under Wisconsin's law, and we treat them like that these days.
Now.
Now, yes. And there are in place at this point in time a variety of cultural resource management laws that I think would protect man mound today. And maybe that's not fair, because I suspect if Man Mound was complete and someone proposed running a road across his legs, that everybody would automatically say no. But for other unknown sites or mound groups or campsites in other areas, there are a variety of both state and federal laws that require agencies to consider the effects of their projects on cultural resources. And while we can talk a little bit about how effective those laws are or aren't, I think in most cases they're fairly effective, and I think it's really given the public an opportunity to express their concern about these areas and preserve them.
Deborah, thank you.
You're welcome.
Lou in Milwaukee, it's your turn. Hi, Lou.
Hello. I have a question about these mounds, not just here, but all over the world. Does it seem that these mounds and their size indicate an attempt to have them observed from on high, in other words, at a high altitude, for some reason?
This is Tom.
Yeah, Tom, go ahead.
I think that some of the mounds were constructed potentially as territorial markers. They're located on high elevations on terraces overlooking prominent water features, and they may have been viewed at an angle either from other bluffs or from looking up at them. We don't know exactly how they were maintained in prehistory in terms of what was on top of the surface, what type of vegetation was present. We think that they were potentially burned or cleared off. But I don't think, if from what I understand the question, that they were intentionally constructed to be viewed from outer space or from extraterrestrial sources, but they may have been attempts to communicate with the supernatural in terms of being viewed from a greater expanse or the supernatural world. I think that is a very plausible explanation.
Yeah.
And it in many cases, it's very difficult to see them even on modern aerial photographs. So they don't really pop out. They really don't have the size in many cases to be easily observed from very, very high above the ground.
Of course, the Man Mound would.
Yep, it would.
The Man Mound definitely would. And thanks, Lou, for calling. Rock and Tolman, it's your turn now. Hi, Rock.
Hi there. I'm Rock Ranger. I'm a member of the Ho-Chunk Nation, and I was just wondering, would we be able to tie ourselves with this Man Mound?
John Brohan?
Well, I think that most archaeologists, and I think most members of the Ho-Chunk Nation at this point in time, see a connection between the Ho-Chunk and the construction of effigy mounds. Whether the Ho-Chunk were the only groups, or the only group in Wisconsin building effigy mound, I think remains to be unresolved. But as you know, when you start going back 10, 20, 30, 100 generations, sometimes it's difficult to trace all the connections and all the genetic links and stuff. But certainly the Ho-Chunk were involved. We suspect other groups were. Effigy mound construction probably spread across groups who saw the world slightly differently, perhaps spoke different languages and had did not necessarily share all the cultural traits with each other. So could have been more than one group involved.
Tom, anything to add to that?
Yes, I'd like to agree with everything that John says, and it is important to realize the time depth that we're talking about of effigy mound construction from 700 AD to 1200 AD. So a window of approximately 500 years, and archaeologists have observed, as John mentioned, variation within effigy mound groupings in terms of the forms, but also in terms of the everyday artifactual material on the ground, projectile points, pottery. There are slight variations in different areas of the state that would lead you to believe that the variations represent either different groups or different time periods. And as John mentioned, we don't know if all effigy mound builders spoke a single language, if they would be considered a single ethnic group or not, but most archaeologists do see strong similarities and ties to the Ho-Chunk people today.
Rock.
Well, that's great news to hear. It's a sense of pride that you'd have, you know, just like if somebody, whether your grandfather built something in the backyard of your home or, you know, somebody left it from before.
Rock, I agree. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. And more callers online. Nice to hear from Rock and Toma. Daniel in Rice Lake, it's your turn. Hi.
Hello.
At the fairgrounds in Richland County in early 90s at a flea market, an elderly gentleman had two tin cans full of projectile points and a few stone knives. He said a neighbor had plowed around a burial mound in Sauk County. He found them exposed on the ground. Any theories why stone artifacts would be scattered around a burial mound?
Well, Tom, any...
Well, we do know that some of the mounds existed adjacent to or near habitation areas, and people frequently visited them over probably extended periods of time, either annually or perhaps seasonally. So it wouldn't be a great surprise to see artifacts and the material left behind from these visits of people using these landscapes, and that may be in the form of projectile points, ceramics, broken pottery. Those are the types of everyday artifacts that people could potentially lose or leave behind in village or habitation areas that may be adjacent to mounds or the result of visiting mounds.
Interesting. Thanks for calling, Dan. Another Daniel in New Berlin this time. Hi, Dan.
Hello. Say, we have property in Fox Lake, Wisconsin, on a part of the lake called Indian Point, and there is an Indian mound on our property. And there actually is a monument built, and I'd like to know if you know anything about the history or anything about that that would interest me or interest any of my neighbors.
John Brian?
Interestingly, I was just up at Indian Point a couple weeks ago. Which mound do you own out there?
Well, we're at the end of the point.
Okay.
Last cottage on the point, and it's I don't know how to say which mound, but as far as I know, that's the only monument on Indian Point. There is any mound on Indian Point that has a monument on it, and that happens to be on our property.
I'm not familiar with that particular monument. I know there are three linear mounds out there. I'd have to look into the records and see who placed the monument and when and why they might have been involved. But putting monuments on mound again in the early part of the 20th century was a fairly common practice in a way that people. Could recognize their importance and recognize the fact that they were committed to preserving them.
I see. Is there somewhere that I could get some information that would enlighten me on this a little bit?
If you want to give me a call at 608-264-6496.
That's yes.
And give me a call when I'm back in the office this afternoon. I'll look at our records and we'll see what we can find out.
And that's what agency is that, sir?
The Wisconsin Historical Society.
Well, is that a burial mound?
Oh, yes.
That is a burial mound.
Mm-hmm.
Well, thank you very much.
You bet.
I listen to your show all the time and first-time caller, but you have a wonderful show.
Oh, thanks, Dan. Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate it. And Alan in Stockbridge is up next, so let's go there. Alan, hello to you.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I just wanted to say I was listening to your program, and I heard the name Tom Plager, and I was like, I know that guy. I Googled him, and sure enough. You're from Marinette, Wisconsin, aren't you?
Yes, that's correct. That's my hometown.
Yes, Alan Durrell here.
Good to hear from you.
Yeah. Small world. Well, I just recently, within the last year, moved to Stockbridge, the village of. And we have Calumet County Park about a mile away from our house. And while walking the dog, I noticed, they have some effigy mounds there. And I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about them so I know what's in my backyard.
I've been out to that park, and I believe that if I'm correct, there's a panther mound present at the park. That's one of the most visible, a group of panthers.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And those have been interpreted by some as representing a water spirit. The name panther has been applied. The idea of a water spirit is that they would represent this mythical creature that dwelled below the water. We don't know exactly what those forms were. When you look at them on the landscape, they appear to have a long, thin tail and then sometimes one sort of a enlarged head and two legs. They may represent this supernatural being. It's possible that they could represent some other animal form. But that group and the group up at High Cliff were outstanding groups in their day when they were in pristine condition. And the whole Lake Winnebago area was occupied by a variety of prehistoric peoples, but in particular late woodland peoples. And those mounds are located in areas where they could have been potentially visible from a long distance away, may have functioned as territorial markers, and probably also functioned as burial places.
Oh, interesting.
And those mounds at Calumet County Park, those panthers, I think, have some of the longest tails that are still surviving. They're really quite remarkable.
Oh, interesting. Thanks, Alan, for calling.
Thanks for calling.
Dan in Madison, it's your turn. Hi, Daniel.
Hello. Hello. Yes, my name is Daniel. I'm calling from Madison, and I grew up in central Wisconsin, and I grew up around mounds, effigy mounds, and I would just like to make a comment that these indigenous Native Americans lived here since the last glacier receded 14,000 years ago, and all they left was foot trails and a few sand mounds. And if we cannot preserve or protect these landmarks that are historically significant, then that is pretty indicative of our society. As a matter of fact, I'm familiar with the Yellow Banks area outside Clover, Wisconsin, and what used to be burial mounds is now a subdivision.
So there's been those kinds of issues, but John, comment?
Well, I think, you know, there have been those issues that go back to early statehood. I think people's attitudes are changing, and we've noticed that at the Historical Society in the last few years, people are much more likely to call us to see if there are mounds in their area, if they're doing development, if there are mounds there, or if there are other types of burials or sites. They've been very willing to redesign their projects and put the mounds in set-asides or in small preserves as part of the addition. So I think people's attitudes are changing. I think if they're aware that these sites are there, that they're more than willing to work with everybody to make sure they're preserved.
And, of course, this Saturday we have a chance to commemorate the Man Mound. And Tom Plegger, just go back through once again with us what's going to happen on Saturday.
Well, on Saturday, August 9th at 10 o'clock a.m., there will be a series of presentations at Man Mound Park representing the various organizations that were involved in the original dedication. The Ho-Chunk will also be represented in terms of the Thundercloud Singers will be there, a speaker from the Ho-Chunk Nation, a variety of elected official representatives. And it's an opportunity to really celebrate Wisconsin's great history and prehistory and to look to the future of how we may plan to preserve this mound and learn more about it in the future. I think one of the outcomes of this event is to put in place a group or a committee that can develop a long-term resource management plan for this park and for the mound itself. It's just a phenomenal archaeological resource. It's world-renowned in terms of being known, and it's a world-class archaeological site. People come from outside of Wisconsin, outside of even the United States, to see our effigy mounds, and this is one that we should be particularly proud of and celebrate this event, that it's been preserved for this long and will be hopefully indefinitely.
And again, if people would like more information, the Sauk County Historical Society, Tom gave that number earlier. It's area code 608-356-1001 if you want some more information on that, 356-1001. Or you can also go online and just go into a search engine, go saukcountyhistory.org. That's saukcountyhistory.org. And you'll find more information about the Man Mound and especially about that commemoration event, which is this Saturday. Tom Plegger, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you, Larry. I really appreciate the opportunity.
Yeah, and John Broyhan, thank you so much as well. You guys will be there, I assume.
We will. Thank you very much for having us on.
Thanks, John.
That's what I figured. Thanks a lot. John Broyhan is the state archaeologist at the Wisconsin Historical Society. Tom Plegger, Dean and Campus Executive and an Associate Professor of Anthropology and Archaeology at the UW-Baraboo Sauk County, talking about effigy mounds and in particular the Man Mound commemoration event this Saturday. Again, go to saukcountyhistory.org and you will find out a whole lot more. Coming up, we're going to be taking a look at the healthcare workforce crisis in this country with a couple of people who have some ideas about what we need, where the problem is, and what we need to do about it. Dean Catherine May and Dean Jeanette Roberts of the University of Wisconsin, our guests, coming up next here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.